I'm joined in the studio now by Ian Solomon and Will Yannick, here to talk about Farmers and Families for Livingston and the work they're doing in relation to the proposed power lines. And I guess to start, hi Ian, hi Will.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Where does it stand? I mean, what's the latest on the power line development? Who wants to go first?
Well, first of all, I'll say you have two sets of farmers and families here tonight. Okay. I'm from Farmers and Families from Livingston. Ian here is from Farmers and Families for Clawrick, which is a new group that just... When did you start that?
We started working in December, largely inspired by the work of the Livingston folks.
Is that where Patty Klein or...
Pam Klein is the head of the Livingston group. That's okay. Right. And I think to answer your question, where we are right now is there's a growing interest in communities up and down the Hudson River in joining this effort as residents learn just what this project is about. And I'm not sure how much your listeners have followed this, so I'll just give a brief recap. But as part of the New York State Energy Highway Plan, the governor has proposed updating transmission lines that are going to run from a 153-mile corridor from central New York down to central Dutchess County. Two of these proposed routes run here on the east side through Columbia County, one crossing at Mount Marino and moving through western Livingston down to the Dutchess County border, and there's another route that crosses at Skodak Island and moves through the towns of Stockport, Stuyvesant, Clawrick, Livingston, down to the Dutchess County line. We're still in the early stages. There's a regulatory agency that's appointed by the governor called the Public Service Commission, and they have not yet picked a project.
Decided between among the four.
They have
proposals.
Neither picked a route nor a particular utility or company that will build
the
process. So we're very early in the grassroots program, and we're mobilizing our efforts right now to make sure that there's a solution that, A, does not take additional land from landowners in our Hudson Valley, and B, uses technologies that are the most appropriate with the least impact.
Because these lines do exist already, right? Or some of them?
They do, that's right, yeah. What we have now are 115 kilovolt lines, and the proposed upgrade is for 345 kilovolt lines.
And the consequence of that is what exactly? You need more space to deliver that kind of energy?
Yeah, potentially more towers.
Taller
towers or wider corridors, both of which are things we'd like to see avoided.
And how is there a way for this? It's all about energy being delivered to the city, right?
It's not
pretty
just
much
a transmission problem. Oh. I think there is a misnomer that New York State has an energy production problem. In fact, there are many power plants that are being mothballed simply because there isn't enough demand. But we do have a unique situation in the Hudson Valley that's been identified by the federal sources called the so-called bottleneck, where during periods of peak demand, it's sometimes difficult to move energy through some of the old transmission wires that were built in our county, some as old as the 1930s and 50s.
Now, some of this, one of the things I read, and it probably was from the governor's office, about how there's energy from upstate, a surplus of energy that can't get sort of away out of there, I guess, to be sold or whatever downstate or...
Yeah, I think the issue now is that it can't be transmitted quickly and efficiently enough using the existing infrastructure.
And what does that mean in terms of, what are the real consequences of that? The energy dissipates?
I think one of the things the governor is trying very hard to do is he knows how unpopular it is to have to upgrade transmission lines on private property and adjacent to private property. And there's strong pressure from the wind lobby upstate to increase their capacity. But I think the two issues are really unrelated. I think there are ways that you can get upstate wind energy downstate without having to take additional land or without building towers that are twice as high. I think the governor has conveniently coupled the two issues together. I won't go as far as to say it's greenwash, but by saying it makes the whole project sound a lot better by saying that he can get his wind energy downstate.
Because we're not talking about another nuclear power plant. We're talking about what people would like to see more of, wind energy, which is,
Correct. And the governor has hitched his wagon to that proposal as well. It's very clear that there's pressure from both federal and local sources to close Indian Point. Of course, for your readers that don't know, that's the nuclear facility. Northern Westchester, that the federal agencies have identified as a homeland security risk, and obviously is unpopular due to its adjacency to a large metropolitan area. But I think the numbers show that you can actually close that plant as well without building this increased capacity. I mean, this really is an issue where there's a federal ruling that identifies this bottleneck. This has existed for years. And the governor has seen this as an opportunity. The utilities have seen this as an opportunity to provide the cover to update the lines that, frankly, they haven't invested in decades. And so where our groups are interested in is making sure that that solution, if done at all, is done with the least impact to the community and our historic Hudson Valley.
So conceivably, it could all be upgraded, but pretty much at the same sort of levels? Is that what you... In other words, the plan could upgrade the actual power... rehab or whatever, the power lines without increasing the amount that goes down?
Do you want to talk about the capacity wires, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are studies that are yet to be done to determine how much transmission capacity is actually needed, and that's part of our efforts is to make sure that those studies are undertaken. There are also some.
You mean whether anything has to be done, or
whether the capacity to transmit energy needs to be increased? You know, we can't deny the fact that the infrastructure is old.
That's what I was getting at. I mean, yeah. Conceivably, you wouldn't be opposed to just fixing the infrastructure as it exists.
That's right. And there are some other options out there. There's a little bit more modern technology. There's cabling that can handle the increased capacity that's not like the cable that they're using now. You know, a lot of the preliminary proposals to replace this technology are using very similar technology to what's already there when there are much more efficient and modern things out there.
So in other words, Ian is saying that there are things called high-capacity wires that are developed by the company 3M that can be strung on existing towers. No new land required, no higher towers. That could increase capacity on existing infrastructure. That's one possible solution. Mm-hmm. But I think a larger discussion that Ian alludes to here as well is that the old model where you have central power generation somewhere like upstate and then that moves in a single corridor from point A to point B is really the model of the past. I think the future belongs to a much more diffuse model where energy comes from many different sources, mm-hmm. many different types of generation. That includes alternative forms of energy like wind and solar and other smaller nimble power plants that are located closer to the source of that use of that electricity.
Which makes, of course, common sense, but then you have the problem of dense areas like New York City that has a greater demand for energy, and where are they actually going to put those kinds of things, you know, unless they're going to put windmills in the, power mills in the river or something.
I don't think you're going to see a future where you have very large capacity plants delivering all of the energy. It's a plurality of many smaller mm-hmm. types of generation, and some of them could be palatable adjacent to more urban areas.
And part of the conversation also has to be energy conservation and microgrids and the types of technology that would enable this more localized distribution model.
So how's the state fumbling on this? I mean, is it mainly just because they tried to run it through too quickly?
The state is actually... I think done something that both gives them a little bit of cover and gives the citizens a little bit more say in the matter than they normally would have. And the way to take advantage of that is by doing what we're doing now. You know, they've set this up in such a way that every step of the process is subject to public comment and then review by the PSC and by their administrative law judges. And the rulings that they make are going to be determined by the type of comments and the type of expert testimony they receive as provided by the interested parties, which are the citizens groups and the municipalities, which have been given power by the state to testify in this proceeding. So that's why our job is to get the word out that this isn't something that you could get fired up and choose to go out and affect. It's something that the state has said what the people tell us is what we're going to base our decision on. And if the people don't know that that's what the state is waiting for, it's going to be the power companies who get their say.
So it's the people who have to tell them about these alternate technologies.
And I think this is a common problem in public service utility boards across the Northeast, across the country, which is that, look, if you have a Sunday afternoon or an afternoon in the week, you know, you're not jones in to read up on the latest bulletins from the Public Service Commission. So it's a sort of de facto advantage for the utility companies who have huge legal counsels that follow this.
Sure.
And all of these influences to weigh in on the PSC when most people are at home doing the things that most people do. So it isn't as if the state has a bias towards utility companies. It's simply that those are the ones that tend to dominate this process. In regards to this particular project, I mean, Ian and I didn't really even know about these projects until a few months ago. I mean, there were months and months of preparation where the utilities were involved with the PSC, lobbying the governor, lobbying lawmakers. You know, by the time letters hit our door that this project was coming, we were already behind the eight ball in terms of organizing. So I think what you're seeing now, to get back to your original question.
And the schedule was much quicker in the beginning, right? I mean,
they were
ready to go right away.
So I think what you're seeing now is this great outpouring of support and interest as residents simply learn about the project.
That's right. Yeah.
And so that's part of, so I guess you're here to get people to, obviously to learn about the project, but also to engage in these open discussions with the state? I mean, how do those work? Where are those going to happen?
That's right. The PSC actually has a comment board on their website that accepts public comments. The website...
You think they get read?
They do. Yeah. We think they do, especially because some things have happened recently, which we'll get into maybe a bit later in the discussion, where the governor seems to have responded directly to many of the comments that were coming from the public on the PSC board. It's a little bit difficult to navigate, and one of the things we're going to do at our meeting is we are going to have some laptops set up, and we're going to have people be able to go right down to a table in the room where we're having the meeting and enter their own comments, and we'll have staff there to assist them.
When is this meeting and where?
It's Saturday, this Saturday, the 25th at 11 a.m. at the Churchtown Firehouse in Churchtown, which is in the town of Claverick. It's on Route 27.
At what time did you say?
11 a.m.
11 a.m. And that's going to be an organizational meeting, as well as you're going to provide laptops for people to respond to post on the
That's right. Yeah, it's a public information meeting. The main purpose is to get the word out to people that this is their process, explain where we've come from the beginning to where we are now, and what the next steps will be. And we'll have some of our state and local politicians there to lend support. We have Kathleen Marchione, who's going to speak. Dee Dee Barrett is going to speak. And I believe Chris Gibson is sending a representative. So this is important to everyone once they find out about it.
Do you have anybody on board who is familiar with the technical issues involving cable and all that kind of thing?
Well, that's actually a very interesting case, because one of the things that we found, the Public Service Commission is something called an intervener fund process, whereby communities that are potentially impacted by new wires get a pot of money that they can draw from to hire experts and hire lawyers and basically defend themselves. Our groups have had an enormously difficult time finding anyone connected to the transmission energy that has not already been bought up or is on retainer by the current large utilities. We've had to go far out of state. We're in a process now of getting those experts who have expertise doing things like building lines underground, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these technologies are now 70 or 80 years old. If we're presumably going to be building the technology of the 21st century, why can't we be looking at technologies like putting them underground, using these new high composite wires that Ian discussed? Why are we simply building the same old towers that have gone by my property since the 1930s? And worse, putting floating ideas on the table that we're going to take an additional, 60 to 125 feet per landowner, per parcel, to basically double the capacity in one of the most historically dense areas of the country.
That's right. And I think absent any outcry or guidance from the public, the utility companies would prefer to do it in the way that is most effective for them, which is fast and cheap, and that's directly at odds with what's best for the people.
Right. You know, I'm fascinated by the whole issue of eminent domain, and now conceivably the people who have power lines going through their properties have an easement with those companies existing. Now, does eminent domain come into play when you expand an easement, or does the easement already cover their expansion?
So several utilities own right-of-ways. They own that land, have it as deed. currently. So those are the two routes that I described now. When we first learned of this issue, we learned that the proposal was to actually expand that land and take by eminent domain additional lands to increase these towers. And I think probably I'm tentatively calling it a success. We've got a long way to go. I think one of the benefits of so much this prairie fire of opposition that's spreading in the Hudson Valley is we're succeeding in pushing the utilities to at least generate proposals that exist within the right-of-ways that they currently own. Mm-hmm. But to be completely honest, we still hear things like the PSC say, we hope to create a solution that doesn't have to use eminent domain and things like that. We'd like a bit of a stronger commitment, and that's why we're still fighting this fight. In addition to the other benefits for providing better technologies that can minimize impacts even within the existing right-of-ways.
So what kind of consultants are on the horizon for you guys to use?
Well, I mean, I think there are a number of different areas we have to cover. The most important one for us has been getting a transmission engineer so we can really analyze these alternate technologies and be able to present something cogent as an argument for an alternative. But we'll be hiring historical preservation experts. You know, Columbia and Dutchess County are very densely packed with historical properties.
Worked before.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know the history of, for example, of Olana and the proposed plant on the other side of the river at one point.
That's
not
right.
Not the sales, not the more recent cement plant, but the other proposal where their view shed was affected, and that helped kill that proposal.
And I think that's the heart and soul of these groups and why you see these organizations growing is that, I mean, when you look at the Hudson Valley, I think agriculture, tourism, historic preservation, these are the growth industries of our region. Why jeopardize this with projects that cynically think of our Hudson Valley as simply the flyover country for the energy transmission? You know, no one in our group, absolutely no one in our group, thinks that New York City shouldn't get the power it deserves. But I think the key point here is there are many ways. Well, there are many benefits that New York City provides to the Hudson Valley, but we can deliver energy to them in many ways that don't A, require eminent domain, or B, require large, ugly towers when there are simply alternatives that exist.
So why did the energy companies begin with plans that would raise the ire? I mean, is it just because it's cheaper to do it the way they originally proposed?
I think a lot of these utilities look at us and say that, well, you know, they're counting parcels and think there's a lot of farmers. We're just going to railroad it through like we always did in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. But the Hudson Valley has changed. We have a new set of residents here. Some have deep pockets. And we simply have a different tradition of democracy in this region where we stand up and fight for our property rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, this dates back to the rent riots in this Hudson Valley. I mean, when you get people riled up, they can really move
That's
mountains.
Right. Yeah, the people who live across the street from me have a tower that is in their yard. It's massive, and it takes up a third of their entire front yard. And
their parents, in Claverick,
yeah. Their parents, at the time that the power company came to them, were selling vegetables on a horse cart, driving them into Hudson every day to make money. And so the power company comes through with a couple $1,000s. That's money to live on for a long time. And I think we're just in a different environment now.
Right. And I live on a fourth-generation farm. Our farm is only almost 100 years now, and this is the second time that a large power easement is being proposed for our farm. So this is personal.
Mm-hmm. How many farms do you think are affected by these power lines?
We do have data on that, and there's several dozen farms. And remember, this stretches all the way to central New York, so this isn't just the Hudson Valley. Three of the largest proposals, there are four on the table, go through potentially thousands of acres of farmland.
And is the problem it just means less farmland, or are there other consequences if it's expanded?
Well, in order, remember, there's a very large construction phase to put these in, and compact soil and disturb soil. In some cases, it's difficult to pasture animals or build fences under these tower lines if the companies still need to have regular access to it. It's difficult to plan for orchards. My own family, there's a section of our land that is fallow currently that we want to plant a new stone fruit orchard. This is indefinitely on hold until we understand what's going to happen to this land and who's going to own it. And remember, this is not a lease agreement. Mm-hmm. You know, in some case, if the utilities one day wake up in the morning and say, sorry, we don't want any of those trees there, it's too difficult to maintain, they have every legal right to come in and just chainsaw it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something, you know, a farmer that has been a steward of land for 99 years wants to hear.
That's right. And besides farms, it's personal property, people's home property and businesses as well. I think I don't have the list in front of me, so don't hold me to this number, but I think there are 85 parcels just in the town of Claverick that this corridor goes through. And most of those parcels are small enough that even a small expansion would take a decent chunk of it.
These proposed lines pass through other counties as well?
They do.
Have you aligned yourself with activists in other counties?
Yeah, we have. The folks in Dutchess County were very active, and it's actually been spreading northward from them. And one of our great consultants in this issue has been one of the people from New Scotland, where they've had, they weren't able to get a fight together the first couple times, and they now have a 600-foot-wide corridor going through New Scotland, and they're just... At this point, they're looking for some type of mitigation because they're in such bad shape, but they're more looking to help us avoid the situation they were in. As far as things further to the north and west, I don't know if there's as much of an outcry because, and Will can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe their corridors are already oversized. Do you know anything?
There is
that?
Some organization, I think, maybe... not as sophisticated in terms of its legal savviness, but you know, if you're a farmer out in Oneida County, you're not happy about this, mm-hmm. and you're going to town board meetings, and they might be just a bit far behind us in organization, but I think they're going to get there as well.
Yeah, even in the northern parts of the county, we went. I went and spoke to the Stuyvesant Town Board a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of the things we were telling them, they were hearing for the first time. So I think it's a matter of getting, once you hear the whole story, a lot of people think, oh, I understand now, I have to get involved.
Right. And I think one of the encouraging things that we've seen through both of our organizations is that this is not just simply an issue of the people who are immediately impacted by adjacent parcels. It's about people who care about this region. It's about people who care about fairness. It's about embracing 21st century technology for a 21st century future. If we're going to be proud about how energy is used, which is the life force of just about everything we do, and we're going to spend literally billions of dollars of taxpayer funding, let's not be coy about this. It's actually you and me, the ratepayer, that are eventually going to have to pay for this.
With interest.
So I think we have a very strong interest in making sure we use the right technology with the least impact and not let the utilities dominate the process and simply do what they've been doing for decades.
So of the four proposals... they all equally need work, so to speak. I mean, they all need to be modified in terms of new technologies or whatever. I mean, in other words, do you prefer any of the four proposals to one of the other?
On paper, one of them doesn't affect us at all, really. It goes down the west side of the river, and they cross, I believe, at East Fishkill and go under the river with horizontal drilling. We have not seen the vetting done completely yet, and it's actually in process, and we're going to be finding out more in the next couple weeks to determine how viable that alternative is, because we're still in the part A portion of these utility companies' applications. There will be some rulings from the PSC that may eliminate one or more of the utilities.
Right. What Ian is referring to is that one of the projects is by a company named Boundless Energy, which is a really interesting idea. They're getting at the heart of the issue as a bottleneck rather than a production problem. And they have a proposal for the PSC to solve this bottleneck with a very small section of restringing wires on the west side of the river. Not this 153-mile corridor from central New York to Dutchess County, but only about, 20 miles or 30 miles or so?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And they have an interesting proposal, which is that they believe they have the right to eminent domain another utilities line and simply restring lines on those. Obviously, the utilities are up in arms about this and are fighting this in court. But if the details settle out, this is a very promising issue that we could support if the details do settle out.
So it's not a case of just kind of blanket opposition.
It's no, really not at all. I think we've been very clear about this. This is not like, somebody wants to build a particular power plant or cell tower and you just want, your position is yes or no. I think what we really want to do is have a solution that works for everybody. And I think there are many options on the table. The problem with the bidding process that the PSC has put forth is that, again, the utility companies, which dominate this industry, have put forth the largest proposals. And we feel there simply wasn't enough time or thought or care to really vet the process out properly to make sure it's the right solution over time.
Now, all the affected districts, the politicians involved have shown interest.
Yeah, especially in Columbia and Dutchess County, we have a little bit of a group that we formed, so we can share information and work together on this, and it includes members of the Milan Town Board, the Clinton Town Board. Will is on the Livingston Town Board. Our Claverick Town Board is very interested. In fact, our supervisor will be speaking at the Saturday meeting. I think it's the
once again that meeting. I don't mean to interrupt, but that meeting is Saturday the 25th at 11 a.m. at the Churchtown Firehouse.
Yes, and I'm happy for that interruption.
Yeah, it's good to constantly remind people of
things
like that.
Yeah, but it's really, I think once the municipal governments find out what their role is in this, they have been very interested in getting involved because they realize that they are one of the parties designated by the state as responsible for charting a little bit of the course for this.
Right, and so we've had town support. We've had the Columbia County Board of Supervisors provide a resolution in support of our efforts. We've had state assembly members like Dee Barrett, state senators like Marchione, which will be speaking at this event. And the thing you'll notice about some of these names is that there's tremendous bipartisan support, which is really something very heartening at this point. I think that whether you are a more progressive sort that's more interested in health effects or ecological effects, or a dyed-in-the-wool conservative that just cannot stand the idea of a violation of property rights, there is a meeting at the table, which I think is very constructive this early in the process and is sending a very loud signal all the way up to the governor.
Well, my co-curator, Ellen Thurston, should take some of the credit for having Pam Klein in here early on, right before that, I think, fairly crucial meeting that sort of was necessary to get things really started. I mean, because at that point, I think it seemed pretty that things were going to happen pretty quickly. And I'm glad to see that it's, you know, slowed down. And that, is there more, I mean, is there, other than this meeting and continuing to inform people, it seems like everything's going pretty well in terms of how this is going to develop.
That's right. We've had some encouraging signs as well. I mean, the governor in his State of the State address mentioned that he had a policy preference that any of these types of upgrades that are being proposed now be contained within existing rights of way. And the PSC has said that they intend to take a look at all the proposals in light of this new policy preference. That's really encouraging, and that tells us, I believe, that these meetings and the public outcry and the public comments are having the desired effect. You know, all the towns we've mentioned have passed resolutions that oppose, you know, expansion of rights of way, and a lot of them specifically approving the work that we're doing.
We've been speaking here, I've been speaking here with Ian Solomon and Will Yannick about the proposed power lines coming through our county. And I have to cut to the headlines in a second. I want to thank them for coming out. Is there anything else you'd like to? One more time, this Saturday, the 25th at 11 a.m. and learn about what's going on with these power lines and how to make sure it all proceeds, you know, with everything being considered, rather than just rush through and once again screwing up our land.
That's right. You can help us keep up the fight to have all of our voices heard.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And I hope a lot of people show up to that.